Hello and welcome to edition 216 of the NRF1 podcast, because Norfolk knows Formula One. This is your F1 podcast straight out of Norfolk, UK. We are recording live from Archant Towers in central Norwich, and we're also going out on Future Radio, also all across Norwich. And we are here to review the 2018 season opening Australian Grand Prix, as well as take a quick flick ahead to China. I am NRF1 podcast co-founder Perry Hamilton, and I'm taking over the big chair on this occasion for our usual host, Michael Bailey. Joining me on today's podcast is Damon Hill enthusiast and blogger Richard Baxter.
Good evening.
Thank you, sir. And budding F1 correspondent, and I'm reliably informed, Dan's brother, Callum Springall.
Good evening.
Thank you. So with its return to Albert Park in Melbourne, Australia, the orchard of F1 is ripe for the audio picking. It appears to have been a very fruitful break for many teams, but for others, it may seem to have gotten off to a rotten start. We'll do our best to get to the core of these issues over the next 20 minutes. But first, gents, F1 is back. How did we like them apples?
Yeah, it was pretty good. It was Australia. It's what you expect from Australia, to be honest. Waking up early. It's kind of what Formula One is always about now, just for me. It's every time the season comes around, it's excitement. But it's also, I've got to wake up at 5 a.m. to watch a race.
And you did get up early in time to watch it?
I did, yeah. Alarm set. It was good. Just had to kind of steal my girlfriend's phone because she had Sky Go on her phone, so I could just kind of steal that and watch away. So got away with it.
See, I had it on record. Callum, were you up to watch it live?
I had intentions of getting up to watch it, but set my alarm for, I think it was like 5:30 or something, so 40 minutes before the start of the race. Somehow ended up waking up at 6:30. And yes, I did factor in the fact that the time, the clocks were changing.
Right.
So I really shouldn't have, and somehow I've slept through an hour of my alarm.
Okay, so, right then. See, I had it on record and I got up at a leisurely 7:30, 7:45. I'd had a bit of a heavy one the night before, but I have to say, I managed to stay awake through the whole race, and that's always a win for me, because it's quite a, it can be often repetitive things can often get monotonous. If they're monotonous, they can lull you back to sleep. Do we think this was a monotonous race, Callum, or did you enjoy it?
It was a little bit processional. I mean, to be honest, I don't necessarily need 100 overtakes or whatever to keep me entertained, but I think the fact that there was a fairly constant sort of battle, if you could say that, between the Ferraris and Hamilton was definitely enough to maintain my focus.
That's an interesting one, because you had both of the Ferraris, but you only had really one Merc at the front. Do you think things could have been different if Bottas hadn't binned it during qualifying, Rich?
I think he would have definitely been in the top four. Would have been, you know, harder for the Ferrari, I think. But ultimately, it was down to strategy and a bit of luck that decided the race winner in the end. Having another driver there, okay, you might, you know, have a 2-3, but it was just that luck. It depends when they would have, you know, brought Bottas into the pits to make his stop, and tyre strategy and things like that that he would have been on. That, you know, would have been the ultimate decider. But then, you know, we saw how difficult it was to overtake at the circuit, and really that's just the nature of that Albert Park track. Whereas, you know, you look at many other circuits, they're much easier to overtake at.
And I think we've got to give credit to Liberty, F1, whoever it is that's making these decisions. They put in the extra DRS zone. Everyone was kind of a bit, oh, wow, this will make a difference. Do you think it made a difference?
I don't think it ostensibly made a difference to overtaking. Perhaps you could argue that it increase the chances that you would be able to follow and therefore be in sort of within striking distance to make an overtake if it was a good one. But the fact that the advantage you would need is about 1.5 seconds a lap kind of says it all, really, that it wasn't really worth anything.
Yeah, I found that as well. And I remember thinking, oh, an extra DRS zone. But really, you're still going to end up. So if you've got your three DRS zones, you don't want to use one DRS zone to overtake, then only just be ahead, be less than a second ahead at the next detection point, to then be, you can just be re-overtaken. So it neutralises itself, doesn't it? Or have they come up with a way to fix that?
Yeah, it is true. You know, if you're overtaking that zone, you can still get ahead as well. Because coming out of turn one and two, they've got the second DRS. So if you're overtaking the first zone, you can then use that to your advantage to build a gap. But, you know, that's what people have said they want to see, is overtaking. And they found a way to allow people to make it easier to overtake. Mm. But ultimately, you know, the battle, it can make a bit of a mockery, because you could potentially have the same cars overtaking each other lap after lap.
sort of trading places, going back and forth kind of thing. So I was watching it with a friend of mine, and he made very sort of fair observation. I think they touched on it on commentary as well, but I was watching on Sky. And they said, other providers are available. Do we have to say that? I think we do. So they made a fair point, which was, it's all well and good having the advantage of being able to, you know, hit that DRS, get that sort of flap open and go. But the car in front has the battery, so that the car in front uses its battery boost to kind of keep you behind it. But then you've got to think, but the car using the DRS should also have a battery boost as well, shouldn't it? Or has it used all of that in trying to keep up? So really, are the two things neutralizing each other? And in that respect, do we have too many toys at the moment? Do you see what I mean by that?
Kind of, but I think if you look at, for example, Raikkonen defending from Ricciardo, Ricciardo was told you can use all the battery if you want for the last, what, two laps or something. So it's not the case that it's not there for one of the drivers, so it's not necessarily neutral, and DRS is still a benefit, as it were, but it still had no effect. It just sort of reflects the fact that it's so hard to overtake.
So we know it's hard to overtake. I think really it only gave us, for Australia, it gave us a rather small number of spills. Would we say, I mean, we had Bottas big going off in quali. We didn't really have any big stuff in the race. We had cars stopping, but there wasn't really a big smashy, the technical term, smashy, that I remember. There was nothing there really, did it? So it's a processional race. There wasn't a lot, you know, in terms of fireworks. Were we only really enjoying this race because it meant Formula One was back in our lives?
I think partly. I think it started quite promising because we had moments where I think it was Alonso trying to overtake Sainz around the outside of whatever turn it was, possibly 13, off the top of my head, but he didn't manage to pull it off. And then you had, I think it was Hülkenberg and probably Ricciardo, and I think they were battling for position in the whole, yeah, Ricciardo did, you know, did one. And I was like, oh, we're actually seeing some good fights here, it's quite even. But then it kind of did go down towards the end of the race. But I think the more people, you know, it was more enjoyed because of some kind of controversy that was there, surrounding, of course, the Haas team. And there's lots of people, well, not lots, there's a few people who have kind of said conspiracies relating to Ferrari as well.
It came out of my mouth moments after it happened in a joking way. I wasn't being serious, but I remember saying it, and then David Croft said, there'll be some conspiracy theorists out there saying it was all for Ferrari. And I turned to my friend and I just said, well, I've already said it, Crofty. Like, I'm one step ahead.
That was my first thought. I just said, someone's going to claim conspiracies against this, and it was, you just know that's going to happen in Formula One. But there's already, you know, drama, of course, with the whole VSC and fallout from that as well.
So. And we'll touch on that. I wanna get into that a little bit later on. But what I really want to sort of say just very quickly as we close, I have two things to say. One, I seem to remember on our season preview podcasts, both the one that you could get available normally and the one that our patrons through Patreon have access to as well. I can't remember which one we said it on, but I seem to recall Kyle did say Haas were going to be very competitive. And he did say that, he said very, very good things about their engine and their reliability. It looks like the car itself, there's nothing wrong with the car, but it just looks like their engineers can't get their wheel guns right. Or did they look competitive enough from your point, Callum?
Well, yeah, I think you can take from qualifying and early on in practice that, if anything, Haas are the only team that have broken away from the midfield pack. So I suppose to say that at the minute they're the best of the rest is probably right, but to say that it'll last is a completely different thing, because, you know, Renault and McLaren have bigger budgets and they have considerably greater capacity to turn around development parts in a short period of time. So what is likely going to be the case is that Haas have to really capitalize to the absolute fullest at this moment before they're caught up and overtaken by the bigger teams.
And a very quick one, just sort of a one word answer from you, because I want to touch on it in our next podcast for our patrons. Did you notice the halo, yes or no?
Well, I know it's there.
Okay, let me rephrase. Did it impact on your enjoyment of the race?
No.
See, skeptics. What were they worried about, eh? Just to make you aware, a quick reminder of the best places to interact with us on our social media pages. You can follow us on Twitter, which is at the NRF1, Instagram at the NRF1, Facebook at the NRF1. They're all the same. Or you can go to fb.me/thenrf1. Join in, post in our Facebook groups. We're all on there. We all get a nice little bit of chat and we like interacting with you. You can email us as well. And the good ones that we get, we will get out on the podcast for you. We had some great emails emails last season. We really enjoyed getting into those with the guys. You can get to us at nrf1podcast@gmail.com and never miss a podcast from us. If you go to nrf1.uk/pod, subscribe. All of your podcast players are on there. Michael can reel them off the top of his head. Unfortunately, I haven't got them written down, and I'm not that well that well mentally dialed into it, I'm afraid, Mike. So we're looking forward to you getting back and sorting that out. The website ties everything together for you, so anything that you're not listening to me here on saying, just go to the website, which is nrf1.uk, and you get everything you need to join us. Right, gents, you know it's that time. It's time for the NRF1 Pit Stops. No, non-Haas pit stops. So what we're going to do, we're going to just pop through and we're going to give you three pit stops. We're going to stop off 1, 2, 3, each a different team. All the other teams we are still going to talk about, but they're going to be available in our Patreon-sponsored podcast, which we'll be recording just after this one. So the opinions will still be hot and fresh. But first, I want to start with a name you probably didn't hear much all weekend, which is Alfa Romeo Sauber. Anybody got a hot take on Alfa Romeo Sauber and how well they did in their first race?
They did okay. I mean, they weren't as far off in qualifying as practice would have suggested. I think there was something like a second off of the next Williams, but ended up ahead of, I think it was Gasly and Sorokin. So it doesn't look too bad. And then obviously in race trim, Charles Leclerc was ahead on pace of Lance Stroll, which probably reflects about as well on Stroll as it does on his car. But it looks okay, and they've got a revolutionary car, so there should be more to come at least.
I think that's a fair point, is that they can get better. And I think with Alfa coming in, Sauber have now maybe got a little bit more finance to get, you know, where they need to go. You said the same thing about, you know, we're not talking Renault money where they can really turn things around, but they'll have more than they were if they were just Sauber. But you hot-tipped Charles Leclerc in our preview podcast, didn't you? So did the boy come good for you?
Well, he wasn't quite top 10, which is a little bit annoying. But he seemed quite happy with his race and with his pace as well. So, you know, I can't really criticise him too much, to be honest.
Rich, we talked about just a little bit a moment ago, and Callum made a very fair point in that Haas has, you know, been the ones to separate themselves and progress more and become the best of the rest. Is it so much that Haas have improved, or is it more along the lines of actually everyone else has kind of gotten worse? They've gone a bit backward, really. And do you feel that Alfa have done that?
I think they're Alfa have kind of changed the whole way Sauber were. The last couple of seasons they were at the back, they were struggling. I think last year they had the previous year's engine, so they had the 2016 Ferrari engine in the car, which, you know, was obviously a long way off the pace compared to the newer engines out. And I think the thing that Haas have done, they've made sure they've got, you know, this deal with Ferrari where they can get certain parts from them which are going to be up-to-date modern parts which, you know, Ferrari would use. So they know that they have parts that are able to compete, whereas Sauber, a lot of the time, that, you know, especially last year, didn't. This year, they've changed the car. They've seemed to change their philosophy a bit. I think they can move forward from there. I mean, Ericsson comes with a lot of backing, so they have a bit of money to play with from him. But I did hear it was a sandwich bag that I think went into the brake duct or something, or it might have been Sorokin. Was that Sorokin? Yeah. Wrong driver, so you can forget that point. Make that later.
Yeah, no worries. Alfa, they're not as bad as they look. They can get better. Toro Rosso, can they get worse? I mean, it was a dire weekend for them, wasn't it, Cam?
Well, I suppose so. I mean, I can't really get a lot worse than having Gasly qualify last and Hartley finishing last, with one of them out of the race entirely. And they didn't really live up to the expectation that they set in testing. There was sort of the idea that they could be the fifth fastest team and were also quite reliable. But then again, the fact that they were using three engines over the course of the two tests kind of shadowed just to what extent they were reliable. But generally, they do quite well on a low budget.
But realistically, okay, I completely agree. And that's a very fair point. They don't have the backing that Red Bull have at all, not financially. But this is a team that is effectively a Red Bull Academy. Don't they need to be much higher up the pack if they want their guys to learn how to race at the front of the pack? Because that's really the idea, isn't it? Come in, sit in the Toro Rosso seat, learn the racecraft, learn how the team works, get in the mix of things, maybe get some top 10s if you're lucky, push for a top 5. But really, you're never expected to win, but you're expected to be mid-pack. Because if you're not mid-pack, you're not learning how to race higher up in the pack, are you? So we should be seeing more from them this year, shouldn't we?
Well, yeah, that's pretty much their purpose. But I think if you look at it with some degree of perspective, the Honda isn't exactly a world beater. But Toro Rosso are basically giving them free rein to develop the engine as they wish, whereas McLaren weren't. And given the souring of relations between Red Bull and Renault, you can only really see Red Bull going towards Honda. So I would have thought that Red Bull are basically using Toro Rosso to develop the Honda so that they're sort of cutting their own losses from 2019. Also, if you look at the drivers, they're kind of at the dregs of their driver program because, I mean, Gasly's not... he's not a Verstappen or he's not a Carlos Sainz, and Brendan Hartley was dropped and then sent out to the World Endurance Championship. So neither really have great potential. I mean, maybe one of them could be a number two in the senior team, but they're not going to go on to be world champions, I don't think.
And I think that's worth mentioning. You said Carlos Sainz as well. He's only really on loan to Renault. You know, they're going to want him back at some point, aren't they? Richard, I want to now talk about McLaren. We've had a lot of debate about McLaren and their colour scheme and whether or not we like them, but they looked pretty good on track, didn't they?
They did, yeah. Seeing the F1 grid, a lot of years you look at it and it's quite dull. But this year, you know, it looks really good. You've got the McLarens who are there, you know, this papaya orange colour. And then, of course, you've got other teams in there who, you know, Renault, for example, who are also bright colours. And it just makes it something nice to look at. But the McLaren going round, you know, they got a good fifth place finish with Alonso. Again, a little bit lucky with the whole VSC situation. But they were looking good. They were, you know, both running in the points. They were both driving consistently. They were able to challenge, they were saying, the drivers. I think Alonso's message at the end was they were able to fight. Whether it's enough they can improve the car to actually fight for wins, I'm not sure yet, but we'll see. I think the next race is going to be very telling.
A little awkward as well when Alonso basically chastised his race engineer for being too dreary, too boring, and then there was that awkward moment where he sort of did, no, I'm right here with you, mate, I'm racing with you, and you just thought, oh, that's cringy. That's a little cringy, but I enjoyed it. No, I really liked seeing McLaren. Just watching Alonso in something capable, in something where he can put his foot down and he knows he's not going to just get engulfed and eaten, and he's actually going to be able to fight. And, you know, Van Dorn was very respectable. He's clearly a number two. He's not at the caliber that Alonso is, but he's doing what they need him to do, isn't he? So there's hope there for McLaren.
Yeah, I wouldn't say any different, because they've got a reasonably good platform in the Renault engine, and already they're fairly quick. I mean, they're sort of level slowest with Renault as the slowest Renault-powered car. But the fact that it's so bare kind of hints at some form of promise in itself, because you can't help but feel that there's so much more to come from them. So given the sort of technical prowess they have, let's say, and the fact that they've seemed to have ironed out the problems from testing, there are, to some degree, high hopes for McLaren.
High hopes indeed, and we are very pleased with those hopes, because I don't think that there's a single person on the pod who enjoys seeing McLaren do. We will get into more NRF1 pit stops. There's a lot to talk about. There's still some teams there that we haven't touched on at all, that's, you know, absolutely really important to talk about. And we also haven't as yet talked about what impact the virtual safety car had on the race, which is huge. But our big news for this season is that we are really pushing our Patreon page. We've decided to set up our own NRF1 club, like an executive lounge, if you will. And we'd love for you to become a member and join us as we sit down and talk all things F1. You can join by visiting patreon.com/NRF1. That's patreon.com/NRF1. And you'll get access to all of our bonus podcasts, all of our videos, blogs, all of our posts, photo stories, the lot. There's exclusive t-shirts, posters, stickers, badges. They call that merch, I think is the word. They've got some merch there. And you can get official entry into the Prediction League, and there's prizes for that as well. There's all sorts going on, and if you want us to include anything, then you just let us know. All you have to do is visit patreon.com/NRF1 and join up for real. I think from as little as less than £2 a month, you can contribute to all of that lovely stuff. So as we move on, it's time for our of the weekend. Gents, we'll go around nice and quick. I'm going to start with the Rodolfo Gonzalez driver of the weekend. Callum, I'm coming to you first.
I think Lewis Hamilton, to be honest.
Really? Lewis Hamilton? Give me the reasons behind that.
Well, he put together quite, well, a great qualifying lap, let's be honest, and assuredly led the whole race, and was only really unlucky that he didn't win it. Because to be honest, the fact that he was so close to Vettel at times just showed how much pace he had to burn. So I don't really think that being 6 tenths ahead in qualifying was quite as much of a faux pas as it seemed.
Yeah, I agree with that. I'm quite in shock. We've just had Callum like give that award to Hamilton. So, I agree with that. Also, give a shout out to Raikkonen because he outqualified Vettel in qualifying. In the race, he kind of suffered the same fate as Hamilton, dropped back a bit. But it was also his kind of. There was a little clip I saw on the podium where Vettel was going to kind of spray champagne over him, and he just put his hand out and kind of used the force. And kind of just stopped this champagne flying out, and it was just like, no.
He's like that big brother to Vettel there, isn't he? He's just kind of like, you know, young whippersnapper, stay down. No, you're not spraying me with champagne. Don't even do it. Don't even think about it, Seb. I'm not even sure he looked at him, but we did have the classic Kimi, me and my friend were waiting for it. We were waiting for it, and it almost didn't happen, where third place trophy, we thought, here it comes, one hand up, one thumbs up. And then he didn't do it. And then at the very last second, he did it. And we actually cheered so loud, we worried that we'd woken my wife up, who was still upstairs asleep. So apologies to Helen if we did, in fact, wake you up. I want to give it to Alonso, because I just think it was so nice to see him actually being able to fight, so nice to see him clearly enjoying racing again. And I think that's really key. I do think he had a really, really good run. And an honourable mention, I think, in it, just to get Callum on side, to Charles Leclerc. I think overall he performed very well and had a lot of people singing his praises and talking about him, you know, in that same, not quite as effusively, but in that same vein as we've talked about, you know, young drivers like Verstappen in the past, and saying, you know, this guy has got a really bright future ahead of him. But you heard it from Callum first. Clearly, team of the weekend, Rich.
You know what, I'm just going to give it to McLaren, just from what we saw last year and some of the struggles I had pre-season. Double points finish and a good points finish as well from Alonso. It's what you want to see from them.
Excellent.
Probably give it to Ferrari. Their sort of strategy call to pull Raikkonen in, who was then had to have been covered off by Hamilton, meant that Vettel could lead the race and sort of effectively wait for the virtual safety car. So it was sort of playing the chances, really, and it was for once a gamble that paid off for him.
And it's a fair gamble on having some kind of safety car in Australia, isn't it? It is effectively still a street circuit. I like giving it to Red Bull for this, you know, because I think just the boldness of going on the harder tyre for their Q2 run, putting them in a position to maybe go longer. If the safety car hadn't happened, who knows where they could have gone. They know they can't beat on raw pace, so they know they've got to try something a little different. And also a big shout out to Christian Horner, who was pit wall communicating with the guys in the commentary box and just would not give anything away. Crofty's there asking him real like pertinent strategy questions, and Horner's just there basically going, no, Crofty, I'm not telling you my strategy. He said something about the harder tyre going on, and he went, well, I can assure you that is the harder tyre, and yes, we've put it on, or something. It was a really facetious comment, and I thought it was absolutely brilliant. Pastor Maldonado of the weekend. This is the people that have maybe made not the greatest contribution to our enjoyment of Formula One over the weekend. Callum?
It's got to be the Haas mechanic, hasn't it?
Well, there's two, isn't there? There's rear left and front left, so...
I think I'll take rear left.
Good, I'll take front left. Rich?
I'm going to go for the guy who forgot to type any last names in on the TV graphic. So it just said last name.
Yes, I took a picture of it, Rich. I was going to tweet it and then I forgot. But yes, absolutely.
It was brilliant. It was just one of those moments where it's just like, someone's f***ed up. You're just watching it and just like, yeah, someone's f***ed up.
Just a quick note though, those new graphics, I like them. I think they look really swish, and there's a lot of information there that you can take in if you want to. But obviously, as I believe, are you someone who works with copy text a lot, aren't you? In the role that you do, to an extent?
To a certain extent.
So it's not. So you would know, you've looked at that and gone, nah, I would never do that.
To be honest, I really liked it. I looked at it and I did like it. I was going through and it was like, ah, especially in qualifying, they show who the driver in danger is. You get a little mugshot of them.
I liked it when it had the little groupings on the side during the race of who was battling. Who's in that battle? I mean, I'd like to know what the criteria is. Do you all have to be within 2 seconds of each other or what? But I thought that was a really good thing. Giuliano Salvi moment of the weekend.
In the post-qualifying press conference, it was the moment where Seb said, you can have a party and me and Kimi will have a party tomorrow. And just the look on Kimi's face after Hamilton said Kimi parties all the time is just peak Kimi, I think.
I think he's probably shown three facial expressions the whole weekend, really, hasn't he?
Yeah, it was also related to the TV graphics. At the start of the race, they're kind of going through the driver lineup and the grid. And you had the Sky Sports kind of football style, everyone standing there posing, and there was just all these kind of awkward poses. Most people just folded their arms, but there was some people, it was like, who was it who did the point?
I can't remember who did the point, but I also remember there was someone who was mid pull on of their, I think it might have been, it was either like Charles Leclerc or Pierre Gasly or someone who was mid pull on of their overalls as well. I cracked up. I thought that was absolutely spot on as well. Very, very good. I think I've already mentioned mine. I think it was Alonso basically telling off his race engineer, I think was, and also the awkward silence after Lewis Hamilton asked, "What happened, guys? Why aren't I in the lead?" That was a very awkward, very pregnant silence.
Voice as well. It's just like, okay, Lewis, we're investigating. And it was just like,
you just know that as soon as he took his finger off that button, he was going, you know it was happening. That's a lot of bleeping for you, Mike. Sorry. I also want to give honourable GOAT mention, honourable Pastor Maldonado mention to Sebastian Vettel's barber. Okay, we'll move on from there. So race rating, gents, what do we reckon out of 11? What are we giving this?
It was okay, so I guess maybe 6.
6 is fair?
Yeah, I was going to say 6. Enough intrigue to keep you interested, but it wasn't necessarily exciting.
Very quickly, one word answer from you. Who's going to have the biggest smile on their face heading home from Australia?
Daniel Ricciardo.
Because he always does, yeah?
Yeah, I would agree with that. I was going to say for a minute Vettel, but then there were certain things saying he's not 100% comfortable in the car, so I think he could be a little nervous.
I'm going to say not Kimi, because Kimi doesn't smile. Okay, so make sure you catch all of our podcasts. You can subscribe to your player of choice. Just go to nrf1.com/pod, subscribe, and you'll find the link for you. If your podcast player isn't on there, then please do let us know. We've now got Radio Public and Spotify, as well as all the other iTunes, Audio Boom, Google Play, Spreaker, Stitcher, Acast. Look at that. I read them. I remembered them. They were all there. So yes, of course, if your player isn't there, just let us know. So we will get it added as best we can. We would also love it if you could rate and review us on iTunes. That would be wonderful. Hello, everyone. This is Jake Humphrey here. You're listening to the best Formula One podcast from the best county in the world, the NRF1 podcast. And I wasn't paid any money to say that.
No, I did give you some beers.
So, I'm going to rattle on through here because we are running out of time, but our next race is China. So, gents, well, he's got here China. Oh, is it Bahrain?
Let's check the race calendar.
I'm pretty sure it's Bahrain, actually. Yeah, you're right. Mike, you've stitched me right up here. Bahrain. I'm just reading what Mike's written to me. Yeah, okay, so our next race is Bahrain. I've made some China jokes as well. That's awkward. Let's start again. Okay, gents, so our next race is Bahrain. How do we feel about Bahrain?
It's better now. It's at night time. I don't know if it's just because the tyre or the track temperature is a bit lower, so the tyres work better. But it just seems the races we've had there, when it's become a night race, have been much more entertaining. But then, you know, we'd have to change back to daytime race to probably compare.
I think we can expect a more consistent climate. We obviously, with Australia, we had rain, cleaned the track. Track was very green. You could feel the track coming to the cars in qualifying. Much more consistent in Bahrain in terms of weather. So do you think we'll see consistent times throughout practice, quali and race, Callum?
Well, you always get track evolution to some degree, at least. I don't think Bahrain is particularly often used over the course of the year. So working on that basis, it would be particularly green, which would then accelerate the rate of track evolution. But to be honest, I can't help but feel really that it's just another Mercedes track, you know, a lot of long straights. And they seem to have certainly ironed out the deficiencies of the W08 in lower speed corners.
I think I agree with you on that. I think we will still see a battle at the front. I think you will see Ferrari tackling them, maybe not in qualifying. That special engine mode that we'll talk about in our Patreon podcast. Christian Horner's not been the happiest chappy about that, has he? So I'm going to get one prediction each from you, and then we'll do more of our predictions for our prediction league, and we'll go through the details of the prediction league and everything on the Patreon podcast. So your biggest and boldest prediction for Bahrain, Callum? Or Rich.
So I took advantage. I wrote some down in my lunch hour today. And mine are kind of all on par with kind of bigness. So I'm going to tell you one, and if you know, if you want to find the others, you know what you've got to do. But my first one I'm going to say is five different teams in the top five.
Oof. Woof, as Mike Bailey would say. Callum, we're coming back to you.
I think top three in qualifying will all be 2x2x2.
So top three rows, you mean? Ah, okay. So we're going to get lockout, second row lockout, third row lockout. Are you going to say what they're going to be? Or
I would go with Mercedes, Ferrari, Red Bull.
I think that's a very, very safe bet. I like the sound of that. I am going to go big, and I am going to actually say both Haases will finish in the top seven. I'm going to say the Haases are going to finish. They're both going to have successful pit stops, and they're both going to finish in the top seven. So that's what we're going to do there. Okay, if you want to hear more bonuses, get onto our Patreon podcast. Get onto the list by going to patreon.com/NRF1. We'll go through all the Patreon stuff, all of the options that are available to you, all of the merch, all of the photos, the blogs, everything like that. And of course, if you get sponsored to us, you can get into our prediction league as well. And we look forward to sharing that time with you. But for us now, we are done. We want to hear more from you about Australia. So please do get in contact with us. Use all of the links that we've said earlier. So you can hit us on Twitter at the NRF1. You can get us via email, which is the NRF1podcast@gmail.com, maybe. Yes, that's exactly it. Michael's much better at doing all of these than I am. But we will be back any moment with our Patreon podcast, which, as I say, you can access on patreon.com/NRF1. But if you're not a patron of our podcast, you will get us when we come back after reviewing Bahrain. And of course, once Michael is back with us then as well. In the meantime, we thank you to Future Radio and we say goodbye from the crew. So goodbye, Callum.
Goodbye.
Goodbye, Rich.
Goodbye.
And this has been the NRF1 podcast. The first race of the season is in the books and early returns suggest we could be in for a compelling season. And let's hope that that is the case. Goodbye.